It's the Congressional Corner. This is Ian Pickus, and I'm joined by Massachusetts Congressman Richard Neal, a Democrat from the 1st District in office since 1989. Happy New Year, Congressman Neal.
Happy New Year to you, Ian, and to your listeners.
What did you do over the holiday recess?
Well, I actually spent a lot of time here catching up on mail. Did some get-togethers with people that, for a lot of reasons, are outside the mainstream of American economic life. I think we were pretty helpful to some of the local fundraising campaigns for people that find themselves indigent during the holidays, and then spent a lot of time starting to map out a strategy for the future and what the congressional session will look like the second half of the 118th Congress.
Well, what does it look like to you?
Well, it seems to me that even though it looks as though that the parameters of a spending agreement had been reached, essentially it's the same agreement that Democrats came to with the former Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, and the ceiling that was spent early on is $1.7 trillion, and I think that was an agreeable number. In fact, I believe every Democrat in the House voted for that agreement that the Speaker at the time reached with the Democratic leadership and President Biden. That was based upon a handshake. But there were a series of recalcitrant Republicans inside of the House that opposed it, and I think it's likely that they will continue to oppose the agreement that has tentatively been reached between Senate Leader Schumer, Leader Hakeem Jeffries, and Speaker Johnson. So one of the problems that is going to occur now is likely that Johnson's going to have more trouble with Republicans inside of the House than he will have with Democrats, and then he has to decide and determine what that means perhaps to his own fate going forward.
Yeah, so let's break down some of the details of this deal that was announced just as Congress was getting ready to come back to Washington. As people will probably remember, there were these two deadlines looming of January 19th and February 2nd. And as you say, this more or less keeps funding where it was, right?
That's exactly right, and I think that that's a reasonable suggestion given the fact that inflation has been in that 2.5% as reported recently. The trajectory is on the downside, but nonetheless that some of these initiatives, for example, Veterans Affairs, which is included in the first tranche of the difference of opinion between those Republicans that I referenced earlier and the mainstream thinking in the House, that would be up immediately. So you have veterans benefits, you have the agricultural budget, all of those are threatened with a government shutdown. And I think one of the things that's important to remember here, Ian, is that this is not a Democratic government shutdown. This is a prospect of a Republican government shutdown. There is an element on their side that would risk the full faith and credit of the United States as it relates to the debt limit ceiling. They are also opposed to any even insignificant increases in domestic spending. And at the same time, they've also threatened defense spending as well. So the combination, I think, that President Biden highlighted yesterday makes a good deal of sense. And remember that on the defense side, you're talking about authorization here. That is not necessarily the appropriation. Those are two differences that many people don't, I think, comprehend. Authorization is what you could spend. That does not mean that you reach that ceiling. The appropriation is the actual number that you want to pay attention to. And on the domestic side, many of the priorities that we've had as Democrats were met based upon the agreement that Joe Biden had with the former speaker.
So in a letter to his colleagues, Johnson said, you know, the cuts are not going to satisfy everybody, but it was the best deal Republicans have gotten in a decade. You, of course, on this show predicted that McCarthy would lose his job over the last round of negotiations. Do you think that the Freedom Caucus will give Johnson the ability to agree to this, or will it cost him too?
I think that he has more room than McCarthy did with the religious right in the conservative party. And I think that what that means is that he probably has a bit more latitude, given the fact that he would argue that that's early in his career. He was a surprise choice for speaker. And I think that he might make the argument that he tried to find his footing. The downside of it is that this group of purists and the perfectionists, and we have some of those as well, that you have to at least pay some attention to the arithmetic of the House. And in the House, it is likely that with some of the health challenges that the majority leader has, that they are going to be down to two votes in coming weeks. And it looks likely that Tom Suozzi is going to win that House seat that Santos vacated.
Right, the Long Island seat. Vacated
on behalf of Santos, the Long Island seat. And then their fortunes are even more narrow. So it's conceivable that they go into an election cycle with a 2 or 3 seat majority. And despite that 30 group of Republicans who are against everything, I think that the prospects are that Johnson is simply saying, look, for Republicans, better off to reach an agreement than to have a government shutdown. Bill Clinton won his government shutdown with Newt Gingrich. Everybody agreed to that. And then Barack Obama won his government shutdown argument with John Boehner. Republicans, I think, the mainstream, they understand this, and I think many of them are anxious to reach an agreement. However, the problem is going to be that there is this arcane rule that Republicans adhere to in the House, which is preposterous, and it's called the Hastert rule. And the Hastert rule says that you need a majority of your own party to pass legislation. That is very different than the Congress that I went to considerable years ago. And I think that it has also defeated the opportunity for bipartisanship. But that Hastert rule has been pretty stubborn. It's just underneath the surface of these debates. But those 30 Republicans, they are pretty unpredictable, I can tell you that. And 8 of them forced the former Speaker of the House out based upon his decision to allow but one of them to bring a challenge.
Some people, even on this show from the other side of the aisle, have said that while the Democrats came together with the Freedom Caucus and didn't save McCarthy. So I guess in practice, the Hastert rule didn't mean that much to them.
Well, it certainly didn't mean that much to 8 of them. And to that argument that Democrats didn't save McCarthy, Kevin McCarthy created his own problems. His decision along the way to keep trying to appease them, to buy them off, just didn't work. And then the follow-up to that was when he acceded to that preposterous rule that one member of the Congress out of 435 could bring a challenge to the chair for the purposes of vacating that leadership. That was a decision he reached. And the second part of it with Speaker McCarthy is he was not a policy person. There are many of us who are interested in policy. And oftentimes, policy is complicated, and I think that in his instance, his inability to come to the rescue of many of them based upon policy determinations, and coupled with the fact that he had 8 to 10 of them that were just determined to take him out, and they succeeded. That was nothing to do with Democrats.
Is it strange to see him go from a lifelong aspiration, becoming House Speaker, to being out of Congress within 1 year?
Well, let's put it this way. He had a very narrow majority. The promise was that I think that you make these arguments to people that are never going to be in the tent when you need them. And I think legislative process inside of the House is pretty challenging. And I think that he mistook these short-term agreements that he had with people in an effort, again, to buy them off. Just wasn't going to work. And I would contrast that with Speaker Pelosi, who took the position with the people that were recalcitrant on our side, that she was going to stand up to them, and she did. And the result was that we were able to pass significant legislation, largely because she did not acquiesce to issues that you just can't reach an accord on.
So given the fact that a lot of the agreement that was announced on spending goes back to the McCarthy-Biden handshake deal of last year. Just to wrap up here, what did the GOP majority in your chamber actually get here?
Well, I think they're going to get some arguments that it's going to speed up the cuts to the IRS. I think that that's something that we can deal with. I was part of the group that put that legislation together. There was a substantial increase in IRS spending, and I think we can revisit that down the road with not a lot of difficulty. So I think part of this is going to be window dressing for Speaker Johnson after having subscribed essentially to what Speaker McCarthy did. But I want to just emphasize something that I think is important that you raised, Ian. When McCarthy and Joe Biden shook hands at the White House on an agreement, the history that I come from, that makes a difference. You keep your word. And I think that the fact that that agreement was reached and we're revisiting it now means that we should stay with it.
We've been speaking with Massachusetts Congressman Richard Neal, a Democrat from the 1st District. He's been in office since 1989. And Congressman Neal, when we come back the next time, let's pick it up right here.
You have it.